Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Sansara Taylor, and you are listening to We Only Want the World here on WBAI 99.5 FM New York, commercial-free listener-sponsored radio, a show where we always put humanity first, not America first. And I'm a writer for RevCom.us and an advocate for the new communism forged by Bob Avakian, and I ask you to follow me on Twitter or Instagram at Sansara Taylor. And if you tweet at me during the show, I'll bring your comments or questions on the air with us. This week, we have so much to talk about. It's a new year, and it is such a tumultuous and politically volatile time within this country and, frankly, between this country and the rest of the world. Donald Trump has been impeached, and this very intense fight at the top of society within the ruling structures of society is roiling. It's scheduled to move forward into the Senate this week. We got to talk about this. Also, as everybody knows and has been riveted by, and with good cause, a lot of people have been aroused and angered, as well as filled with fear by Trump's acts of war against Iran, which the bourgeois media is telling us, oh, the danger is past. Everybody stepped down. It's cooling out. And it's true, there wasn't a bigger military escalation in the short term, but things are very intense, and the sanctions he is threatening are murderous and crippling and very, very killing, as well as other things. So we're going to talk about this. And I'm very happy to have three guests that we're going to explore all this with. First, well, I'll introduce him last because I'll bring him on the air first. We're going to talk about the impeachment. We're going to talk about Iran, and we are going to talk about the Out Now movement and the protests happening today across the country, sponsored by RefuseFascism.org, to demand the Trump-Pence regime must go. So our first guest will get into all of that. In the middle, we're going to have a quick call in from Andy Worthington, because today is, horrifyingly, it is the 18th anniversary of the opening of Guantanamo Bay Prison in Guantanamo Bay, this torture camp. So if you were born 18 years ago today and you are just becoming a legal adult, that's how long these 40 men still being held. Some of them have been held from the beginning. That's how long they've been held there in this torture island. We are going to hear from Andy Worthington, who is the lead journalist and advocate for the closure of Guantanamo Bay. He'll be calling in from a protest in D.C. in the middle of the show. And at the end of the hour, we're going to talk with Coco Das, who's on the editorial board of Refuse Fascism, about this situation and what needs to be done. And we'll be taking your calls with her. So to start us out, we have an educator and an urban social policy researcher from Chicago who is a regular writer for Counterpunch and other sites. He is also part of the Out Now movement. Paul Street, welcome to WBAI.
Hey there.
Hey.
Nice to be on.
Great to have you with us here on We Only Want the World. So I want to jump right in. We have so much ground to cover.
Sure.
You have written about the international crimes of what this country has done to the world in the Middle East, both Republicans and Democrats, for years.
Oh,
sure. And domestically. But the first thing I want to ask is, recently, when you've been writing about Trump and Pence, you've been identifying this as a leap from even the past. You've been calling them fascist. And I wanted to start right out with why you say that.
Oh, well, my goodness. You know, the list of the reasons for saying that is long. I think the open, explicit, blunt rejection of basic bourgeois law and constitutionalism is a real hallmark. Some of that in the history of the imperial presidency. There's a lot of that in the history of the imperial presidency, but never on this scale and never so insistently. I mean, open defiance, where administration officials are not allowed to respond to congressional subpoenas. The absurd statements like Article 2 of the Constitution means that I can do anything at all that I want, the declaration of fake national emergencies in order to seize the power of the purse and divert money to build a big fascist nativist wall that nobody wants, the open defiance of international migration and asylum law, the ordering of border patrol agents to break the law if you want to. It's okay. Shoot people if you need to, and I'll pardon you. and on with that kind of thing. That's certainly part of it. The open, explicit demonization of people of color, of immigrants, the encouragement, the incitement to violence at his rallies and in his tweets, which have in fact sparked a slew of hate crimes, lethal, murderous hate crimes from coast to coast. How about openly pardoning open fascists like Sheriff Joe Arpaio, or the war criminal? This is just astonishing that this didn't get more attention. The pardoning of a open racist war criminal, Eddie Gallagher. You know, so the list goes on and on. That this is a sort of a departure, a qualitative break from the past, admittedly horrible bipartisan, corporate, capitalist, ecocidal, racist, and imperial practices of all U.S. presidents. But really, we've sort of gone into a new space that can be accurately described as fascism. And I tell people who question that to go to one of Trump's rallies, one of these regular hate hours. That's what, you know, they're about 75-minute hate rallies, you know, that led by the hater-in-chief, where he demonizes liberals and leftists, falsely conflating them, and you know, refers to people trying to carry out basic constitutional checks and balances against him, even to have any kind of congressional inquiry into him, as people who are engaged in a coup, in a witch hunt, even in an attempt to overthrow the government. And this is a president, to wrap up a very long story, who has made it abundantly clear, as numerous people, even on the right, are now warning, that he likely will not honor the outcome of an election in 2020 that does not go his way. I'm not sure you could say that about any previous U.S. president. This one is a very serious threat and risk to defy an electoral college count that doesn't go his way. It's an astonishing thing to say, and it sounds like something that a paranoid leftist, you know, like me, I'm kind of joking, but it would say, but that you're now hearing from people like Norman Ornstein of American Enterprise Institute. Michael Cohen warned about this. Anonymous, the senior White House administration official, who just wrote his book, A Warning. It's kind of a right-wing and conservative book, but it contains a warning that Trump will not leave peacefully. I mean, think about that. This is something new. This is a qualitative break.
You know, I actually pulled the quote that you're referencing from Anonymous, who was the senior official inside the Trump administration. That you're citing, and you cited it in a recent article, but you quoted from him, but I pulled it. I wanted to read it because I think it's important, you know, that the concern and the alarm from those who are close and know him well and actually probably share a lot of his policy agenda, are still concerned about this and sounding an alarm from a very different perspective, but I wanted to read it. So he says, he cites a big, quote, worry for our republic. What may happen if Trump is removed from office? By impeachment or a narrow defeat in the ballot box? Trump will not exit quietly or easily. It is why at many turns he suggests coups are afoot and a civil war is in the offing. He is already seeding the narrative for his followers, a narrative that could end tragically. So
I think that's such a key point about the narrative, and he's been creating that narrative from day one with the myth that he actually won the popular vote and that it was stolen from him by this nonsense claim of millions of illegal immigrant voters. I mean, literally from day one, he's been setting people up for that.
I want to ask one more question about this as it pertains to the recent acts of war against Iran, because There's no short history. There's an enormous history of the U.S. invasions, violence, assassinations, targeted killings under W, and then gone to new levels under Obama, including assassination of a U.S. citizen through targeted killings. But you wrote in your recent piece,
Obama did a bunch of that, right?
He was the drone striker in chief as well as the deporter in chief, which gets to the nature of the system. But in speaking about the qualitative change of fascism, you wrote about what's some of the continuity with previous administrations, but also the leap involved in how Trump carried out this aggression against Iran. And I wanted you to speak to that a little bit, too.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, just to study the history of American foreign policy and presidential behavior is a horror show. And it that also goes back to the very beginning of the republic, the settler republic, the indigenous genocide republic, the slave republic. It goes back to the start and all the way up, obviously, through Bush and through Obama. But I think there's something different with Trump. I mean, just the remarkable, reckless, and provocative audacity involved in directly assassinating a top military political figure, Soleimani, General Soleimani, in a foreign sovereign state on the territory of that government, Iraq, without that government's permission. I don't know that I could really see a previous president having done that, and it appears to have been done somewhat impulsively, out of a political motivation, probably over and against the advice of most of top U.S. military and intelligence officials, this kind of defiance of your own bureaucracy and the surrounding of yourself by yes-men who go against the establishment conventional wisdom of the bourgeois imperialist system is really kind of extraordinary. I don't think that Trump really made any serious effort to wrap this incredibly provocative crime. He's very lucky it didn't provoke a major war. It still might. You know, he didn't barely even attempt to wrap it in the flag of international law or coalition building. And he does it in such a way as to demean and degrade and try to destroy the other major capitalist imperialist party in the country, and to demean his predecessor, Obama. All this nonsense about Obama gave them the money to shoot these missiles at us, and, you know, Obama was bankrupting us with the nuclear deal. And
just in case people didn't watch Trump's, let me interject for just a moment. Just in case people did not watch Trump's speech responding to Iran's missile strikes on U.S. bases, he did literally say he was flanked by the generals, and he came out and he said that Obama was to blame for Iran's action. This is an extraordinary accusation, but that's what you're referencing.
That's a new step. Yeah. I just can't see George W. Bush saying that about Bill Clinton or Obama saying it about Bush. There's a kind of bipartisan respect and ruling class consensus that Trump is, in his pursuit of a cult of personality and absolute executive authority, is just transcending. This is a qualitative departure. I mean, and just the openly thuggish, mob-like behavior, the threats to, you know, the war, if we have a war with Iraq, it'll be over quickly, which is a not-so-veiled threat to use nuclear weapons, if you ask me, and then saying he would attack cultural sites, which is, he had to stand back from that when they told him that's a complete war crime. But this is the kind of language and the kind of Mussolini, Hitler and Mussolini-esque, grandiose, hyper-emotive bullying and threatening, and, you know, dictator-like behavior that's been outside normal bourgeois conduct in the United States until now. I suppose he's hoping to normalize that, make that the new norm.
So then let's move a little bit to the implications of this. I mean, we could explore the qualitative leap and, frankly, the continuity. You're right, going back to slavery and genocide. And people say fascism couldn't happen in America. But actually, if you look at the history of this country, there's tremendous amount to explore about where fascism, the history it's rising out of here.
Jim Crow South may have been objectively fascist and was an inspiration for Hitler.
It was actively studied by Hitler. That's true.
Yeah.
So, but because we don't have, I think we're going to have you back and talk more about some of that, but we don't have that much more time. I want to talk about the implications, and I know that you are part of the Out Now movement. Maybe you could talk a little bit about what that is and why you think that, the correlation, as you see it, between sort of the qualitative leap of fascism and why there needs to be a different kind of response. Go ahead.
Yeah, we are calling for Out Now, and this is beneath and beyond the election cycle. We need to meet him immediately, as soon as possible. That's an extraordinary thing to do, and that's because this is an extraordinary threat. The notion that we can sit back and wait for impeachment, which isn't going to work, he was impeached. You know, it's a great black mark on his historical record. I'm glad he has that mark, but everybody knows that the Senate, which is majority Republican, is working hand in glove with the executive branch. The Republicans there are completely defying constitutional principles and just working hand in glove with Trump to make sure that he won't be removed. So that's not going to work. All this notion that, well, we're going to use this normal constitutional process and get rid of him. No, you're not. It takes a two-thirds vote in the Senate. You're not going to get it. in the majority Senate, which shows no predisposition at all, because it's so afraid of the Trump base to move forward on it. So that's one. Well, okay, it's the election coming up. Well, the candidate most likely to defeat Trump, the one who could most effectively mobilize constituencies that have been demobilized by the corporate Democratic Party, is Bernie Sanders. And the Democratic establishment is doing everything they can, and its media, to demean and degrade and to ignore and to diminish that candidacy. And I find it very difficult to believe that the Democratic establishment would tolerate Sanders' nomination. And then even if he was nominated, I think you'd see a lot of elite Wall Street and the corporate, normally Democratic interests, either standing down or even backing Trump. So it's not clear the election process is going to work. And even if it was Sanders, particularly if it was Sanders, and he cleared these hurdles, or if it's Biden, we have all these indications that Trump will not honor the outcome of the election. I mean, it's a very serious and very real threat, and he will try to mobilize rank-and-file Christian fascist soldiers and police officers and militia and other what he calls tough guys on his side around the claim that the outcome was fraudulent and try and stay in office. It's not even clear the normal electoral processes are going to work, and that means we need to look now at other countries and the kind of stuff they do, and for our province, colonial province, Puerto Rico, this government's going to have to be forced out from the bottom up through direct action. There's no Santa Claus or Easter Bunny saviors in the liberal class. The Constitution isn't going to do it. The electoral process isn't going to do it. We have to do it. No one can do it except we, the people. And if we did, it would be a game changer for the subsequent politics and social movements of this country going forward, too. It's not just about getting rid of Trump. It's about setting a new marker and creating a new level of organization and popular resistance that would change the game in the United States and in the world.
Yeah, I think you mentioned with the Senate is not on track to convict, and that would the Republicans are the majority, and they're opposed to. They're working with Trump to not only probably let Trump off the hook if they can get away with it, but also to Trump wants to even use the impeachment to go after the Democrats and go after Hunter Biden and all of this.
Yep.
But I think that's something, too. The equation could be changed. There is an opening in the fact that he's been impeached. That equation could be changed, not by just pleading with or calling the senators, but if there was this outpouring from below, if there was pressure from below.
Sure.
And I think that intersects with there's actually protests. You're going to one of them in Chicago today. There's protests around the country. If you want to say anything about that in the last 2 minutes that we have.
Yeah, no, it is. There is a moment there. And there is this incredible sort of fracture. And there is a part of the elite that's trying to get rid of them. And fractures in the elite are always useful to popular forces. And, you know, Trump really did set the founding fathers' wigs on fire with Ukrainegate. It wasn't his, by any stretch, his worst sin or his worst transgression, but it's a very real transgression, trying to enlist a foreign government in defeating his own domestic political rival. And it's actually the main thing the founders gave for the reason for having the impeachment clause. So there is some space to work with there, and there's a possibility that he could be gotten out that way. It's very important that we remind people that Mike Pence is a Christian fascist, and therefore we're not just talking about getting rid of Trump. We're talking about getting rid of the whole Trump-Pence regime. So I agree. I agree that there's a there's some space there to force this president out, and that would be an important precedent if people in the streets could force a constitutional process against its own logic and against its own particular interests to remove a president because he's such a fascist and such a racist and a sexist and authoritarian. So I do agree with that. There is a difficult thing that no one seems to want to talk about, which is the U.S. Constitution itself and the rather disturbing fact that Wyoming, with 500,000 people or so, have the same number of U.S. senators as the state of California with 39 million people. I mean, it's a big part of why it's so damn difficult to fully remove a president. The most reactionary rural white and right-wing parts of the country are absurdly overrepresented in the U.S. Senate. It's just sort of preposterous the way we're saddled with this charter crafted by slave owners and merchant capitalists wearing wigs in the late 18th century people for whom democracy was the ultimate nightmare. But by all means, let's expose that them and their process as forcefully as possible, because it is an existential necessity by all means necessary to remove this fascist existential threat to humanity.
Well, Paul Street, I'm so happy to have you for the portion of the hour that we've had you, and we'll talk again in the future. And I hope you guys have a
very
really
good.
Great,
I look forward.
Yeah, really great protest out there in Chicago today, and we'll be out in New York City. Protest at, I believe it's at 2 o'clock at Union Square if people want to go to that. So thanks for being with us.
Okay, you bet.